Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know that this episode will talk about infertility and miscarriage. If you are sensitive to this subject, this episode may not be for you right now. If that's the case, please be kind to yourself and skip this one or listen at a time when you're ready.
I think at that point I was in shock and I think I was angry because I just wasn't understanding what was happening. And I felt like I was always being surrounded by women who were having kids or women who were pregnant and clearly didn't want their kids, or seeing women that weren't taking care of their kids. And I just was like, what is going on? Like, why is this happening to me? And so I think I got myself to a point where I kind of gave up. So I feel like when you ask how was I feeling, I was very, very angry. I was very unhappy. But then in a weird way, I don't know how to fully describe it, but something spiritually was happening as well.
Hello, welcome to The Vibrant Introvert, the show about real people experiencing introversion and social anxiety, their stories of transformation and change, and how they thrive in their daily lives, all told through the lens of acceptance and commitment therapy. I'm Gabby Lanier, a board-certified behavior analyst and certified life coach. So, what happens when everything that can go wrong goes wrong? You do what other people do. You might try harder, you might freak out, you might grieve the loss of what you expected to have, and you may even get to that point of giving up. But what happens in this space of giving up, even for the briefest of moments? Something magical can happen, right? So I invite you to join me on this journey of this storyteller. Her name is Narissa Harris. Her story is full of lots of twists and turns, of deep emotion, of experiencing cultural bias, of loss, of grief, of determination, of experiencing deep spiritual healing. This is also a story in which we embark into the realm of faith and a little bit of woo-woo. And if you're willing to do this, to witness this woman's story, I want you to ask yourself a few questions. And so the first one is, what does she deeply desire? Why does she embark on this journey in the first place? And then, what challenges did she face along this journey? What internal experiences did she have in response to some of those different challenges? How was giving up an important part of that experience? And then finally, I invite you to ask, how did she find faith again to keep going? And listen to this closely. How did she find faith? How did she find her faith? This story, it touches on all parts of the framework of acceptance and commitment therapy, also known as this framework of gaining psychological flexibility. And in this model, there are six processes, and I'm going to list them out for you so you just kind of know them all at once. So the first one is present moment awareness. That's skill one. Diffusion. Acceptance. Self as context. Values, and then finally committed actions. And we've talked about all these different processes in previous episodes. And so today I really wanted to be able to kind of present all of them at once. And we're going to talk about them in the middle and then at the end of the episode. And I just want to say to start off with that, you know, a person does not have to know what these processes are in order to do them. They can intuitively use these skills because it is inherent in our ability to learn and be resilient and to navigate discomfort and persevere and find what is meaningful to us. The story that we're going to hear today, again, it's from Narissa Harris. She is a licensed marriage and family therapist who holds a master's degree in counseling, and she has 15 years of clinical experience. A lifetime of lived experiences, which has assisted in her shaping of her cultural work that she does with other people. When engaging in her cultural work, she prides herself on using this real, direct, and unapologetic approach, which I really, really respect. And she does this in order to create the sense of safety and trust. She runs a small private practice in California, and she spends most of her professional career providing trainings, workshops, consultations, and writings to help others increase their cultural awareness, particularly when it comes to working within the African American community. So today, I'm sharing the epic journey of this amazing woman's struggle, her struggle with infertility, with miscarriage, and how losing hope was exactly what she needed in order to be open to this spiritual journey that would lead her right back to what she was looking for in the first place, her faith.
All right. Hi, Narissa. Welcome. Hi. Vibrant Introvert Podcast. It's so nice to have you here. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I am so excited.
Oh, I really am. So. Yeah.
I really, really enjoyed getting to know you over the last, what has it been, maybe 9 months or so? Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. I am. First got a chance to hear you on Annie Schussler's podcast, The Rebel Therapist, yes. And I just really connected to your story, and I got to take your cultural awareness training last August, maybe?
Yep, last August. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and it was very powerful. So
thank you.
I just feel lucky that I've continued to connect with you over the past several months, and I reached out to you to see if you'd be willing to share your story on the podcast today. And you said yes. And I was thrilled. So
yes. Likewise, I'm very, very thrilled to share my story because I share it in bits and pieces, but I really like the way you structure your podcast where I can like actually share my story. So
great. I had asked you originally if you considered yourself an introvert. And you gave me a mixed answer. I was just so curious to know that because I wanted to add that in for anyone listening.
Okay.
How do you describe yourself when it comes to kind of like your temperament? Is it introvert, extrovert? And I know like there's that aspect of you being a Black woman too, which totally has an impact on how you experience it, experience life.
Right. Yes. You know, it's so hard for me to answer that question because I think instinctively I want to say I'm an extrovert, but I don't necessarily think that's true. But then since COVID has happened, I'm like, am I? So I think I'm like introverted in certain areas. I very much enjoy being by myself. I don't need to do a whole bunch of gatherings all the time. You know, some people are like, let's do this weekend and let's do that the weekend after. And it takes a lot for me to be like, okay, we're going to this event. I don't really want to feel like being bothered at this event. But then once I get there, then I'm very much like, you know, I'll talk to people. I have such a really, really good time. But sometimes it takes a while for me to like warm up to the idea of like hanging out. And that can even be with like people I'm close to. If I notice if there's too many things scheduled, I'm just like, I don't want to be bothered. In new situations, I definitely think I'm an introvert, but I appear to be an extrovert, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
So like on the outside, people might be like, oh, she's so friendly and she's really talkative, but I'm not really sharing anything with people that is really of like deep essence and deepness about me. It takes me a long time to be able to like actually share some vulnerable stuff. And so, that's kind of where I am. So I think I'm a mix. I'm very, very comfortable by myself. And I can be like in my happy place. So I like peace and quiet. And I have my little office at the house. And sometimes I'm just like, I just need to go in here and close the door. Like, everyone just leave me alone.
With having young kids, it's like really makes you appreciate that alone time.
It does.
It's like gold.
It is.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I think it's nice to just say what one's experience is because people can assume on the outside, they see things on the surface and all these assumptions, but they never maybe take the time to ask and explore. And And I'm kind of doing that because I think that we all have different ways of kind of showing ourselves on the outside. Yep. We kind of have to because of the society we live in. But on the inside, we might be feeling completely differently.
Yes.
I know it's all context, right?
It is.
I really appreciate you sharing that because I think you have an incredibly strong, powerful voice as a woman.
Oh, thank and you.
So it's kind of, it's validating for me to hear that, that like even someone like you who, you know, we might assume one thing, but you also need that time and that space. And
oh yeah. And depending on the crowd that I'm talking to, like if I'm doing a training or if I'm doing public speaking, I am like a whole ball of nerves and anxiety on the inside, like for real, leading up to it and in the moment. So
I 100% I relate to that.
I'm just like,
oh, you never know.
You never know. So,
okay. And at this point, we're just going to launch into your story, you know, your personal story and where you're coming from. So if you were to kind of take the listeners to the beginning, quote unquote, wherever that beginning is, and you're going to choose where you want to start, how would you start your story?
The story actually started in 2006 when I initially met my husband, who is the father of my children to be, right? And so that's when I first met him, and our little story unfolded. We got married in 2012. I'm not one of those women that have been like, I'm gonna put off parenthood because I want to do these things first. Like that wasn't my initial goal. That's just kind of how it happened, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So we were planning on getting married in 2012. We both wanted to just have at least a year or so of marriage before bringing a kid into this situation. So we've been together going on 2021, my math, 14 years. So like 14 and a half years.
Good for you for doing math on the fly like that.
Like, how long have we been together? And we've been married for almost 9. So basically we at least wanted a year or two to go by. And then I ended up studying for my licensing exam. And so I was like, oh, if I get pregnant now, that's going to be difficult. But I passed my exam in 2014. And then I started working for myself. But the actual journey of trying to become a parent started in 2015. And I did not have my little blessing of joy until 2019. Mm-hmm. And so it was, to say the least, a whole struggle. It wasn't this whole fairy tale of, oh, me and my husband decided to get pregnant and then we have a baby and that's just what happened. That's like not our story. In 2015, I remember specifically we started actually trying in January, mm-hmm. and almost an entire year went by where I was not getting pregnant. And then I found out I was pregnant in December. And then I had a miscarriage, unfortunately, in the beginning of February. So I think I was like 8 weeks along. And I always like to tell people there's levels to miscarriages, and I've had them all. So I had an actual miscarriage. Well, they're all miscarriages, let me reframe. But I had kind of, I feel like, the most traumatic type of a miscarriage, as far as pain wise and physically, with my first pregnancy, where I had to be rushed to the ER. And I was like, I don't know how explicit you want me to be, but
however explicit you would want to be.
Because I don't like to sugar. I mean, you know, Annie, Lord, I'm getting names mixed up. You know, Gabby, I don't do the sugarcoat thing. And so it was a traumatic situation. I was like cramping really, really bad. My husband had to rush me to the ER. I lost a ton of blood. I knew what was happening. Yeah. And then I had to have, like, after all of that, I still didn't lose all of the fetal tissue. And so you have to do a thing called a DNC.
Just for those of you who don't know what a DNC refers to, it's a procedure of dilation and curettage, and it's this surgical procedure performed after a first trimester miscarriage, and they do this to remove tissue in the uterus that has often these little pieces left over of placenta.
Which basically just removes the rest of the pregnancy, which is just another invasive process that is just difficult.
And how far along were you with that first pregnancy?
8 weeks.
8 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Oh. So really early on.
Where were you when you first kind of realized that was happening?
I was at my mother-in-law's house. So mm-hmm. We were actually going there to tell her we were pregnant. So it was kind of like this thing of like, okay, let's tell people now. Because I always had in the back of my mind that that's something that could happen. But I'm also very much a believer in God. And I'm like, well, no, this is not, you know, going to be my situation. And so literally, I went to the bathroom and I was telling my husband, like giving him the eye after I come back, we're going to tell her. And it was like this whole situation. And she's a retired nurse. And so she was trying to calm me down. And she's just like, it's okay. She's so sweet. I have like the best relationship with her. And I feel so fortunate because I know that's like not a lot of people's story. But she was the sweetest thing, but it was also traumatic for her because we had to just leave in that circumstance. And so that's where we were.
Gosh, that timing is incredible. I wonder too, because fortunately you do have that strong relationship with her. Do you think she was kind of just the right person to be around at that moment?
Yeah, I do. I feel like if I had to choose somebody to be around besides my husband or in addition to my husband, it would have been her or no one. So I think she was the perfect person in that moment because I was like, what the hell is going on right now? Definitely.
So that was your first miscarriage. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I mean, I'm just going to infer here that really rocked your world.
Mm-hmm. It did. It did, because it kind of was like, I don't know. I feel like I've always had that fear of like, well, what if I don't, I'm not able to have kids. I also have a history of fibroids, which is, it's common in women, but it's much more common in Black women. And so those can be an issue as well with holding on to a pregnancy and maintaining a pregnancy. So I've always had this like in the back of my mind. And then I worked with a lady when we were working together in a nonprofit, and she made a comment before, because at that place, a lot of women were getting pregnant at the same time. And they were saying, well, who's next? Or who's going to drink the water? And she kind of told me, I just think that's so inappropriate to ask people because we don't know who can have kids and who can't. And that actually can be a triggering question for people. And I had never thought of that because we weren't trying, but then I was like, oh, that's actually really true. And so, yeah, it did kind of rock my world. I think if I'm being quite honest, I feel like I wouldn't say I was numb to it, but I feel like I was shocked for like a really, really long time and just tried to kind of move through life like things were, I wouldn't say things were okay, but it just was a weird way of me kind of moving through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. And I'm sure that's really changed your perspective as a mother, having that first. I mean, well, it sounds like there was that pre-grieving, I would imagine, of just the hardness of getting pregnant in the first place, mm-hmm. and the new fresh grief.
Yes.
Which is totally different, mm-hmm. but hard. Mm-hmm. And then what happened after that?
So after that, we took a little bit of a break. And then, you know, when I got the clearance, the doctor said I could just kind of try again. And that's kind of what we did. And so in August, I got pregnant again. And then again, it was very early on, I had another miscarriage. Mm-hmm. And this time they called it a missed pregnancy, where your body is reacting like you're pregnant, but the egg and the sperm somehow missed each other, but connected, but the fetus didn't even develop. But your body is growing, like the sac is still growing, the placenta is starting to develop, like all these things are starting to happen, but there's no baby.
That is so fascinating that our body can even do that.
And I was just like, what is going on? And so at that point, I remember, and you know, I'm very big on cultural stuff. So my OB at the time was a Black woman who I'd been seeing for years. And I'll never forget when I went in the appointment, she kept looking on the ultrasound and she didn't see anything. And I'm like, well, what does that mean? And she's like, it seems as though this might be a missed pregnancy, because at this point there should be something in there. Because I think it was the same situation, like a 7-8 weeks. So at that point you should see something. It was measuring at like 5 weeks, because there was nothing there. And I remember just sitting there crying, and she just hugged me. And it was just like the sweetest, she literally like bent down and like hugged me. And it wasn't just like this, let me hug her because I need to do this. It was very like a genuine, like she rubbed my back. Like she was really trying to make sure I was okay. Mm-hmm. And so she told me, it's really common. I know it doesn't sound good to say that, but 1 in 4 pregnancies end in miscarriage. It'll be okay. And so that's when she started running tests and stuff for me. And then she referred me to a specialist. But even getting to her was a process. I ran into a bunch of weird, like cultural situations where people were very insensitive to what I was dealing with and going through.
Can you talk to that a little bit?
Yes.
I know this is something that I connected to you over mm-hmm. Instagram. Mm-hmm. I also had a miscarriage, mm-hmm. same situation, not at all helpful practitioners. In that moment, I thought they were actually very insensitive. So that's how we connected. Like, what was your experience in you not feeling like you were feeling that they were being insensitive to you?
Yeah. So my regular OB was very sensitive. And so she referred me to a specialist like in the fertility department. We had to pay half of everything up front. So like a $300 appointment was $150 as opposed to like our $15 copay. Yeah. So I get this specialist. And what made it so difficult for me, and she was another woman of color, and they had run all the tests. She was going over the results with me. And one thing that came up for me was I'm not going to try to pretend like I have all the technical medical information, but basically my egg count was really low. And then my hormone count to get pregnant was really low. So the possibilities of me being able to have a baby according to science and medical history was not really possible without assistance, is what I was told. And so I get to this doctor, she's going over this, she's talking about my fibroids. I had one in the uterus, which could have been causing a problem. And she just was going over stuff on my chart as if it was just a research paper. And the way she was kind of saying, it's probably really unlikely without like taking hormones or IVF. And IVF is really expensive. And I just was like, what is going on? So I just started crying in the middle of what she was saying. My husband was trying to console me. And in the middle of me crying, Gabby, she takes a camera from her phone and puts it up to my face and like, oh, is it okay if I take your picture? We'll just need this for your chart in case you decide to like freeze your eggs or do anything.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, no, like I literally came. So I think she probably thought this girl is possessed, because I like came out of the tears and I was like, no, like no, you cannot take a picture right now. What the hell? And so that was such a bad experience. So I ended up telling my OB, and my OB was like, I didn't even know this lady still worked there. She has such a bad history. I actually thought that you were going to get the specialist that I ended up with. And so she said, let me just cancel that and really put it in so you can get this particular specialist, which thankfully was another woman of color. I don't know if she's Native American or of Latina descent or a combination of the two, but she's clearly a woman of color. And she's the only one that gave me hope. She's like, I've seen women with numbers that were zero and they got pregnant. And she just like reframed everything. And you're like,
thank you. I need to take care of that.
And so, and she would meet with me and my husband. And she kind of was just like, you know, honestly, I'm not worried about you getting pregnant. You've been pregnant 2 times in a year. You can get pregnant. The issue is staying pregnant.
That was kind of my question, because I've gotten pregnant twice.
Right.
Yeah. So that is interesting that they told you that it was going to be difficult to get pregnant. Mm-hmm. It's like they didn't look at your chart to see that you had this history.
No, they did not. And so she was just very, very motivating. She actually did my surgery. So I had to do a minor surgery to have the fibroid removed from my uterus. Mm-hmm. And her thinking was, let's try and get pregnant again after you heal and let's see what happens. And she was saying, if I lose the pregnancy again, then they suspected I had a minor blood clotting issue that only happens when I'm pregnant. So then I would have to take injections every single day until I gave birth, which were blood thinners. There's like no pill. I hate shots. They freak me out. And I was like, oh, that's not going to be my truth because I'm going to get these fibroids removed. And so I had to wait because I got the surgery in May. I was able to start trying like in October. I had to wait a couple of months for like my uterus to heal, for the lining to get thicker again. It was like a whole process. So we go forth. I get pregnant again in October and I lose the baby again, but this time the baby wasn't growing. So this was the different type of miscarriage where there just was no growth of the baby. And so she basically was saying, I'll have you come back in another week. The baby should be bigger. And if not, we have to do a DNC. And this was the week of me and my husband's 5th year anniversary, where we found out that we were not having a baby most likely. So I go back, there's no growth. And then she lets me know, I think she either let me know a little bit before or right after, that she's leaving Kaiser. I was like, oh my God, what is gonna happen now with my journey? Because at this point I'm thinking, am I gonna have to do IVF? Like, what am I gonna have to do? So
pause for just a
yes.
Second. Like, holy shit. Mm-hmm. How are you feeling? I mean, that's a lot to take in.
It's a lot. It was a lot. It was very, very difficult. I think at that point I was in shock and I think I was angry. Because I just wasn't understanding what was happening. And I felt like I was always being surrounded by women who were having kids or women who were pregnant and clearly didn't want their kids, or seeing women that weren't taking care of their kids. And I just was like, what is going on? Like, why is this happening to me? And so I think I got myself to a point where I kind of gave up. So I feel like when you ask how was I feeling, I was very, very angry. And I was very unhappy. I feel like I was definitely depressed and I just showed up in anger and irritability. It didn't quite show up as far as me not getting up and not doing anything. It wasn't the classic that we see as far as depression, where it's hard to do things, I feel like I was doing too much to try and compensate for the feelings that I was having. But then in a weird way, I don't know how to fully describe it, but something spiritually was happening as well.
Okay, so I'd love to pause for a moment. Remember some of my questions that I asked before? For example, you know, what did Narissa desire at the beginning of her journey, you know? And to answer that question, she desired a baby. It's as simple as that. She wanted to be a mother, and that really kind of states her values right there, right? Her and her husband Art, they started on this journey not really knowing the many challenges that laid ahead of them, but they had that singular desire, that desire to be a parent. And so there were lots of different tests to that desire to have this baby. And that first challenge they faced, that was that first moment when she lost her first pregnancy. And that was the moment where she almost announced the news to her mother-in-law, only to find out she was going to have a miscarriage right there in that moment. And there are so many more situations, as you heard, that continue to test that faith of hers on this journey. Challenges such as, you know, having another miscarriage, of facing that really insensitive fertility specialists, of having surgery on her fibroids, and then an additional miscarriage, seeing other women get pregnant and having babies during a time when she could not successfully have a baby on her own despite all of her efforts. And when asked how she felt, she said that she was devastated, in shock. She felt fear that she wasn't able to have kids. She also felt anger and pain and this feeling of sadness, you know, of depression, and then also irritability. It all makes sense, right? The way that we're feeling and the thoughts that we have, they occur in context and they make perfect sense when we step back and look at the big picture. When we look at the many triggers and situations that pit us against these challenges, it all totally makes sense. And yet, how do we navigate it? How do we go on when faith seems to fail us? It's these little glimmers of faith that come out at the strangest times, and it reminds us of our values, of how in our pain we can also experience profound love for one another, our future children, and for ourselves. And in Narissa's story, there are all of these little kind of coincidences starting to happen, and I want you to pay attention to that because there's going to be more as she continues to tell her story. But notice that faith comes not just from struggling and persevering, it also comes once we let go a little. And I mean, that's pretty much like an integral part of faith, right? That we believe no matter what, good will come to us eventually, even in these darkest moments when we have no more hope to hold on to. We end up finding faith in entirely new ways. So let's go back to Narissa's story and see how she starts to open up more to other faith sources, you know, really embodying the sense of acceptance and how this giving up was actually more of a letting go process, a slow opening up to other possibilities and other values to grow in this kind of new fertile space.
And I think I did tell this part of the story on Annie's podcast, but it's such a moving part. Like, I like to tell it everywhere I share my story.
I just want to preface, like, Alice is being super loud right now, so I'm gonna mute myself as you're talking, and then I'll try to unmute myself.
That's okay. Okay.
Please go on.
It's okay. And so me and my husband are very, very cultural. Like, he's a Black man. I love to describe him as very much a Black man, which I love because there's different levels of Blackness, right? We can't generalize ourselves. And so I'm very much a Black woman. And so we had got connected with the Bay Area chapter of Black psychologists during this whole process in October, because I remember specifically that I was pregnant with that third pregnancy in October. We started what they called a Black psychology project, which was, I think it was like a 6 month or 9 month journey throughout this program of like learning more intensely about Black psychology. And it was once a month. And we knew no one here. Like, we knew no one. And the very first meeting in the closing, the guy, they asked, does anybody have any words? And this guy said, somebody in here is with child and they're going to be a mom. And it freaked me out. And people were looking at him like he was crazy and kind of giving him the side eye. But me and Art were like, this man really knows what he's talking about right now. And so he was like, oh no, I'm serious. Cause like when people kind of made their little non-verbals, he's like, no, I'm serious. Somebody in here is with child and they're going to be a mom. And it freaked me out. He freaked me out. I just wanted no parts of this man from beginning to end. And so fast forward, I was angry, but I would go to this Black Psychology Project every month. And it was like the best thing I could do for like my healing. There was a lot of African-centered stuff, like drumming, just like things that were just centered in my roots as a Black woman with African ancestry and like being able to connect in that way. And so during this process and while being angry, I decided that I just told my husband I was over it. Maybe we'll try again. I don't know. But I'm not talking to no other doctor except her. So we had to pay out of pocket to see her because Kaiser wouldn't cover for me to kind of follow her.
Yeah.
And so she ran a few more tests and her diagnosis was still the same. She just was like, the only other thing I would say is for you to do fertility acupuncture, which again, I don't do needles. And so I just was like, I'm not doing that. And my husband kept being like, I keep telling her, which he was right. She needs to do acupuncture to help her with her stress level. I think she's stressed. And so I just was like, enough already. Okay. Like, he was very right though. I just with such an attitude called the acupuncturist and was like, I'm being told I need to come here. I hate needles. I don't want to do this. I just want to let you know when I show up, I'm probably going to have an attitude because I'm very afraid of needles. And she was just so sweet on the phone. She's like, a lot of people are, but they have a really good experience. And I was like, okay, I ain't never had a good experience with a needle, but whatever. So I went to fertility acupuncture. So I met with the doctor. Her name is Dr. Menahares. And then I ended up pregnant in July of 2018. So this is my fourth pregnancy. And this was also the end of the Black Psychology Project, which I'll come back to in a second. So by the time I get to fertility acupuncture, she had to change the whole realm of the appointment because I was now pregnant. And so the work was to maintain the pregnancy.
So you got pregnant before you had your acupuncture.
Mm-hmm, before I had the appointment.
Interesting.
But it's also, I'm glad you say the interesting, because let me tell you why this is so interesting to me, okay? So we finished the Black Psychology Project. I think we finished it like in May or something, but then there's the association, the national level conference that was held in Oakland, the 50th year anniversary, which is just all ironic because I'm from Oakland, my husband's from Oakland, we are very Oakland-centered, we love it. And so that's where Black psychology started, was like in Oakland. It was like this whole thing. And so, mind you, we hadn't seen, I'm going to call him the River Man, the guy that said, he didn't say, Narissa, you're pregnant, but the guy that says someone's with child, I'm going to call him the River Man. And so it's going to make so much, because I don't know his name. And so we hadn't seen him for like a couple of months and he was consistently coming to these meetings. And then he just disappeared. And I just was like, what happened to him? So then we saw him at the conference. And my husband has always been drawn to this man. And from that first time he creeped me out, I just was like, I don't want no parts of this man. I don't know. And my husband's like, he's tapped in with the spirits. And I'm just like, listen, I don't know. I don't want no parts of this man. But we were on the last day there. So we were all standing in line. And so he's seen him and my husband's like, hey man, where you been? And I'm just standing off to the side. And he's like, we haven't seen you in so long. And he was like, I literally died.
I was not expecting you to say that.
You did. So I, you know, I've never really been able to fully tell the story. I'm like so grateful to be able to tell this on your show because I really hope it touches somebody. And so I was like, at that point, I just was like, I cannot with this man. Where did he come from? But I'm still listening, right? And Art was like, what happened? And so my husband is, he's the sweetest thing. He's very people oriented. I'm friendly, but I'm like standoffish. Mm-hmm. And people don't really realize that. So he was like intrigued with his story. So apparently this guy drove Uber and he drove the XL luxury type of Uber. Mm-hmm. And he had a night where he was picking someone up, like a group of people, and they literally robbed him and shot him point blank period in the neck. And he was rushed to the hospital. His heart stopped beating for 20 minutes, he said. And he showed us like the hole in his neck. So it wasn't like he was pretending, you know? And he was like, it's literally by the grace of God that I'm still alive. And we were like, what the hell? So then afterwards, Art's like, man, at the end of the night, he's like, dude, he's really tapped in with the spirits. Like he literally died. Like we really should tell him. He was on point in October. We should tell him what happened. Man, I don't know. If he just showed up, we could just, that would be our answer. And he literally showed, like he started walking down the hall, down the escalator.
That would like, freak me out.
It freaked me out. And my husband was like, well, you know, we wanted to tell you that, you know, I don't know if you remember, but when we first started the project, you named that somebody was with child. And he was like, that was us. And he was like, really? And my husband's like, yeah. He's like, yeah, but unfortunately we lost the baby. And the man said, well, are you guys still trying? And so I looked at him and I was just like, mm-mm. And my husband's like, I think she's just a little scared. Cause I mean, we've had 3 miscarriages. Mm-hmm. And so this guy, I always get like teared up at this part of the story cause it's so moving. So this guy was like, you know, don't be afraid. He said, you need to keep trying. And he said, don't go to the ocean, go to the river, because nothing grows in the ocean. If you really pay attention, there's nothing that's living and growing around the ocean. But if you go to the river, there's a whole bunch of stuff that grows. And I just was like, what? And me and Art had been trying to go on little trips. We had been going to like Pismo Beach. We had been trying to go to stuff like by the ocean. So like 2 weekends later, we went to the Napa River and he like packed this cute little picnic. It was the sweetest thing.
You planned to go to Napa River just because he said?
He did. He was like, we should find a river, Nerissa. And I was like, all right. I mean, I guess that's true. And so he found this river and it was a little hard to kind of get to, but he found it and we walked down to the river and we just sat there and we ate lunch. And then that was a Saturday. Like that Thursday, I just was feeling weird. Like I was feeling irritable. My cycle was being like a little late. My husband's like, let's just not do it so early. And I was like, I don't have the patience for this. I just want to know. And so I took a pregnancy test and I was pregnant. What happened? Now the pregnancy, I had to take these shots because, you know, I still lost the pregnancy after that surgery. Mm-hmm. So that diagnosis was that I had to take the shots and I had to take progesterone. I had to take those damn shots from week 5 of pregnancy to week 39. So for 34 weeks, every single day, I had to take an injection. And 9 months later, I have my little blessing of joy.
I have a question for you. Because when I first heard that story on Annie's podcast, you had mentioned, so the river man, you know, at that meeting saying that someone here has child. And you said, it freaked me out. Mm-hmm. So when he said someone has child, like, had you had your miscarriage already? Mm-mm. And so, or you were pregnant and then you lost the baby?
Yes. So I was pregnant. I was like newly pregnant. Yep.
Okay. And you didn't know you were going to have a miscarriage at that
right moment. Exactly. Okay.
So did it like freak you out in that moment? Because he said, someone's here with child. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it freaked you out because, so I think that, let's say that if this was your first pregnancy and he were to say that, and you didn't have all this history around miscarriage and losing your babies, do you think it would have had that same impact for you?
I think so. You think? Yeah. Because it just was weird.
Yeah.
For us to be in this place where no one knew us, I wasn't showing at all. And no one in the room was like, no one appeared to look as if they were pregnant. And now I have a very different sense of it. But I think at that stage in my life, I was new to, I think I would say new to things that are centered in kind of like Afrocentric beliefs and like African ancestry. And so the super in touchness with like spiritual things and things unspoken, for me, outside of God, like, I don't realize that when I'm dealing with people in the flesh, if that makes any sense, like when dealing with like human beings that seem to have this ability to pick up on things, that just creeped me out. Right. I truly believe that man was like seriously like a spirit and like an angel, because no one knows who he is in Black psychology. And I'm like, me and my husband both, yeah. We both know who this man is. And we've like described him. We're like, what's his name? Like, we've told the story. He used to be a drummer, and they're like, who? And we're like, wait, no. Both
River Man.
Right. And so we've never seen him again. So we've never even been able to tell him. Never.
Okay, that just gave me the chills.
That's why I say I really believe he was a spirit and like an angel sent by God, because when I say we've never seen him again, and like he would come to the meetings, we religiously came to the meetings. He wouldn't come to every meeting, but every 2 or 3 months we would see him. So we were excited, like, he's going to be able to see that I'm pregnant. Never came to a meeting. Okay, he's going to be able to see the baby. Never came to a meeting again. And I'm just like, what happened to this man? Where is he at? And for me, I think that's what I mean by creepy, and it's a little scary, because to me, it almost feels like God literally handpicked someone to be like, go and do this. And I always say, I had 3 miscarriages. You know, I feel like the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit had to bless my womb to be able to carry a baby. I don't know.
So make me cry. I think we need to hear those stories, you know, and I could give my own meaning to what this man represented to you. But like, if you were to sum it up, you know, he came into your life at this really specific time, like just before you're about to lose that third baby, and then came back just if you're pregnant again, hoping to keep this baby.
Right.
I mean, what did he represent for you when you look back on it now?
Again, I really feel like he was like an angel and like a spirit sent from God, because I didn't even know I was pregnant at the time, but I was when we were talking to him. Because remember, like 2 weeks later, I took a pregnancy test.
Mm-hmm.
So literally to me, that's what the man represents. Mm-hmm. It almost feels like probably some kind of way of blessing the pregnancy without me knowing it, because I was already pregnant. Yeah. And didn't have a clue. And I think, I know you're not asking this, but I actually think the other funny piece to this is I actually don't think the Lovenox, which is the injections, work. I don't think that's what kept my pregnancy. I think it was acupuncture, because being pregnant now with my second baby, I had another miscarriage in between my daughter and this pregnancy, and I was taking the Lovenox, but I wasn't going to acupuncture because of COVID, and I still lost that baby.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not on Lovenox now, and this child is standing on my bladder, bouncing around, moving, doing all kind of stuff. And the only thing I'm doing is going to acupuncture.
Mm-hmm.
So I say all that to loop back to, I really do feel like again, in a way that was just like an angel blessing the pregnancy and kind of protecting it, to like go to this river, believe that things can grow, believe that your baby can grow.
And I know that you probably won't connect back to the river, man. But do you see yourself going back to the river? At least once?
I do. I see myself going back to the river at some point. So
what did you do when you were there? Like after he said that to you and you went to the Napa River, like what did you do there?
We just sat, we ate. My husband packed like a little lunch for us. And so we walked the trail. It was a pretty long trail too. So we walked the trail and then we found a bench and we just kind of sat there and looked at the water and listened to the water and talked. And then we kind of walked back home. And so that's kind of what we did. It really was just a moment of kind of walking and embracing like nature. And it really was true. Like it was so much life there. And people, I feel like sometimes we don't think of things like, you know, moss or mold and weeds and stuff as like life forms, but they really are like the biggest indication of like life and fertility. And that's all that was over there at the Napa River. So, yeah.
And so much life has grown within you.
I know.
Even though not all of those pregnancies have, you know, turned into your living children, mm-hmm. you know, so much life has come through you. I feel humbled and touched that you would share that, because there's a lot there. And being a woman who's also experienced a miscarriage, you know, it was, I mean, it's like once you kind of go through that experience, you see pregnancy in a whole new way, and you see being a mother, it just adds this layer of experience. I'm glad in a way that I went through it, because, you know, it just changed me as a mom.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I wish your second baby to be healthy and beautiful. And you don't know the gender of your baby, right?
I do.
Okay.
But I'm gonna.
Oh, you're gonna keep it a secret.
I'm gonna keep it a secret. But I do. I know the gender. But yeah, I could share my daughter's name if you want me to. It has meaning.
Yeah.
So we named her Faith. It took a lot of faith to be able to have that baby, even down to the labor and delivery process. And so we have a little Faith running around here, and pretty soon we'll have baby Harris 2.0 running around.
And you're going to need a lot of faith as you live this new experience.
Exactly. Seriously, it takes a lot. But it definitely is a blessing to be able to call myself a mom. But I always like to share my story, and I don't think I would change it, because I feel like if I can just help one person going through this situation, you know, that it was kind of worth it, because it's so taboo. People don't talk about it. Women don't talk about it, but it happens to so many women. And it's really, really common, and more common in the Black community. I think we're 2 times more likely than other women. So,
and I have to say, I mean, I heard your story, and it was after I had experienced my miscarriage, and I was so thankful to hear it.
Oh, good.
So validating.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's hard.
Your story.
Right? I'm like, I'm not going to be part of this secret society that no one wants to be part of. And so I just encourage any woman listening, or even any man listening that is married to a woman or with a woman, or any partner that's with a woman trying to have a baby, just don't silence yourself. It just makes it worse. And you'll see the more people that you talk to, almost every woman I talked to had a miscarriage or knew someone who did. Literally almost every single woman.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. And that's what I experienced. I wrote something about it on Facebook after I posted a blog on it. And I had so many people reach out to me about their experience. Mm-hmm. And I was just blown away by it. Mm-hmm. Overwhelmed, honestly, mm-hmm. but also just felt like I was in so much in community with those other women, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. that's a beautiful thing in and of itself.
It is. Yeah. It is.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, I will let you go. I'm okay. very proud of Alice for making it through without having a full blown crying episode.
I know. How old is she now?
She's 6 weeks.
Oh, what? That's all?
I know.
Listen, Gabby, hats off to you right now. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. I am very much in the thick of it, and I'm really loving being a mom of two. Narissa, I can't tell you how much I love this new family of ours.
Oh, good.
Yeah, and it's actually deepened my love for my son, who
beautiful
child, but a challenging child.
Yes.
Always has been. And it's just made me see him in a whole new way. But I just love him so much.
Aww.
Well, congratulations on let me do the math here. This is your sixth baby, is that right?
Yep, you're exactly right.
Mother of six.
I know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really want to thank you for coming on today and telling us all about your experience as a mother.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate being able to come on here and share.
Alice ready for bed. Alice wants big huggies. Oh. Do you want big huggies? Oh, you're daddy's girl. Yes, you are. I love you.
You just listened to Narissa Harris, a Black woman, a mom, entrepreneur, and creator of Bloom Into Your Best Self, where she believes in helping people do just that, bloom into their best selves. Narissa is an introvert powerhouse and has a monthly newsletter called Walk a Day in My Culture, and is also the co-founder of Culture First Family Therapy and Training Services Incorporated, where she provides that training, that supervision, and then consultation on helping others become more culturally sound in the work that they're doing. And so you can connect with Narissa or follow her work through her website, bloomintoyourbestself.com. And you can also access her e-store through her website, which she has some different cultural products for sale that will help you bloom into your best self. And I definitely want to plug, you know, she has this workbook that just came out that I purchased, and I am really enjoying using that as kind of an addition to some of the other work that I've done with her in the past. And like she mentioned in her interview, Narissa is pregnant and due literally any day now. She might be giving birth at this very moment I'm recording this. I have no idea. And at the moment, I'm so excited for her that she is, you know, she's embodying this sense of faith and just, you know, living her life and moving forward on this dream of being a mother and having more kids. And Narissa, thank you so much for sharing your story. Earlier, I mentioned, you know, that we can utilize these skills of ACT without even necessarily knowing that we are doing it. And that's because these processes are inherently within any story of transformation. They are part of the fabric of human resiliency. And Narissa, she went through this, you know, this story and experienced so much pain, more pain than most mothers go through to meet their children. She experienced heartache and pain and grief and anger, you know, when she couldn't keep those pregnancies. And she continued to move toward her values of being a mother and her faith in God, despite the many pains she experienced along this path. And then through her miscarriage, she connected with other women who had the same experience of pain and suffering in their journey toward motherhood, miscarriage, loss, giving her this kind of added sense of compassion and connectedness to others. And then she stood by her faith and made committed actions to continue to try to get pregnant, to take breaks when she needed, to advocate for herself with medical professionals, She made committed actions to endure acupuncture and those damn injections with all the needles and everything for the sake of keeping her pregnancy. And then she opened herself up to another faith and belief system. And then finally, she got her faith. She got her daughter, Faith. She also, in the process, strengthened her belief in the divine, her God, and her power to nurture more life. It's so beautiful. And as I mentioned in the interview, I too experienced miscarriage and suffered from a missed miscarriage just a month before the pandemic in February 2020. And I related so much to Nerissa's story. I was profoundly impacted by my miscarriage. And it was actually, for me, looking back at it, the kind of the big picture, it was this pivotal moment for me when I decided to actually continue this work of disseminating ACT and serving others as my main mission. Because once I kind of let go of that miscarriage, of kind of resisting it and not wanting to let go of my grief, I kind of found myself pregnant again later on that year with this renewed sense of faith and purpose. And I believe wholeheartedly, my spiritual belief is all about this kind of divine, unstoppable, transformational power of love. And I believe that we can love people we've never met, people who have died. Their love can continue to impact us, nurture us, and their love is carried on in our hearts long after they've left this world. And so, in closing, I just invite you to consider your own sense of faith and how you can connect to that faith by opening up and letting it nurture you, comfort you, and reveal to you your own source of resiliency and strength. Matthew, do you know how much I love you? This much. More. This much? This much?
This much? I'm bigger than the world.
Oh, more than that.
Farther and farther than Pluto.
More than that. If you are interested in reaching out and telling your story, contact me on Instagram at actinspiredbehavior or at my website actinspiredbehavior.com. And if you're interested in learning more about my coaching services or receiving support in your own journey or transformation, check out my service, Coaching for Vibrant Introverts, which specializes in serving those who self-identify as introverts and who may experience anxiety and social anxiety. I would love to hear from you. And if this episode resonated with you, subscribe to this podcast and stay tuned for each new episode every other Wednesday-ish. And perhaps you know someone who could relate to Nerissa or myself or benefit from this story because of what is going on in their life. If so, text them the link to this episode and share it with them on social media. I would just really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Farther than Pluto.
That's right. Hello again. I want to take a moment and say that this podcast is for educational purposes only. Content and conversation provided in this podcast should not be taken as or replace professional or therapeutic recommendations. As a board-certified behavior analyst, my goal is to disseminate ACT and behavior analysis to the wider public and have meaningful conversations to further explore our understanding. If you are concerned about your own personal well-being, I encourage you to seek out the help of a licensed professional who can provide individual support to you. Thank you.
That's how much you love me?
Oh, yeah.
I love you this much. I like love you spot. That much. Just a
the size of a bean?
Just a smackerel of love. I love
a smackerel
you.
Of love?
Mm-hmm.
What?
Me.